Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider, our first of two podcasts in a 24-hour span that will bookend the startup spring practice at Notre Dame. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined today by Tim Priester and Drew Mentock of Irish Illustrated, John Bryce of USA Today. And guys, thanks to Rob Hunt, we don't have to make this podcast about speculation and projections. We promised to have plenty of that anyway, but the annual most informative 12 minutes of our lives happened yesterday. Rob Hunt running down who is limited and who is out just for tomorrow in spring practice. Let's not bury the lead. The worst news, of course, was that we have been even a little worse than I think we had hinted at over the last, not hinted at, stated over the last 6 months is Charles Jaugas' situation. We did not expect him back in the summer. I did expect kind of a more positive view, Tim Priester, for maybe September 1st than we got yesterday.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, plaudits for the University of Notre Dame for providing Rob Hunt his availability yesterday. It's huge for us, and it does eliminate a lot of the speculation. We appreciate that. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I didn't know that he was about to have a fifth operation. You know, I thought some of the reactions to your guys' incident analysis yesterday were interesting because it was all about injuries, and so you're going to have some negative news. But yeah, that's significant. I'm pulling for the guy. It may not be 2026. It may be 2027. You know, and I think Notre Dame can. I think we have a question here. We'll talk about what that offensive line is going to look at. I thought Sullivan Absher made significant strides the last month of the season. So you may have to go in that direction. But yeah, that was. I mean, you hate to hear that for the kid, and you also love to hear Rob Hunt talk about if there's anybody mentally prepared to continue to handle this, it's Charles Jaugas.
We talked about this a lot. JB, I know you and I were, for the first time ever, I think we got a positive report on Jaugas about 10 days ago. This couches it a little bit, although I know this sounds really ridiculous to say, but this fifth surgery is the one they are pretty confident in. So I think that was the positive report. It does just push back that timeline. I mean, our guess was never in August, but certainly in September. Now we don't have no reason to speculate because we have no idea what we're talking about at this point. I mean, no one knows. Rob Hunt doesn't know. Charles Jaugas doesn't know when he's coming back at this point.
Yeah, no reason to speculate. But I would say the optimism that we all heard yesterday from Rob Hunt lets you know that there's optimism about this season, not just the future of Charles Jaugas, but there's optimism about this season being in the future of Charles Jaugas, which I think jives with what O'Malley, you and I had been told in recent weeks. And there had been that positive report, and they had said like there's still cleanup involved and all of that. Obviously, it hadn't been to the extent that we knew there was going to be surgery yesterday, but there had still been signs of encouragement is the best way to put it, is what you and I have both gotten. And then obviously Rob Hunt, very encouraging yesterday with his commentary.
Yeah. And Drew wrote a story on this pretty detailed on Jaugas. It's been a journey, man. The mental part, Drew, you and I talked about, I think off camera. I can't remember what happened on camera yesterday. I think it was off camera. You and I talked about the mental aspect for Jaugas.
Definitely. And I think too, if you're him and the staff, at least now they feel like they understand why for 5 or 6 months the bone really wasn't healing. At least they have a potential solution with the infection and then him going on antibiotics and the antibiotic seeding, which I think is injecting the antibiotic straight into the bone, is what I learned based on Googling it yesterday. So at least from his mental standpoint, it's not like, why is my body not cooperating? They have an idea, and hopefully for his sake going forward that that healing process does cooperate. But yeah, they've mentioned, I mean, you saw last fall he would be working with the team during fall camp, getting him involved at least a little bit in practice during individual drills, and then he would go off and kind of do his own thing. But it does seem like their teammates and coaches are rallying behind him, keeping him involved as much as he can. He's meeting with team psychologists, but yeah, you have to, I mean, not just the injury in itself, but then having so many delays has to be difficult. And it sounds like, based on what they said today and what I've heard, that he is getting that support, and he does have a lot of, he is a tough minded guy who does involve himself. Like even with him helping out with fall camp, that was his own desire to be involved. It wasn't something the coach was like, you need to do this. And he did it. It was like, I need to be involved. And I think he does do some of those things.
I think when you have a fall ACL injury, March is simply, are they on track? And it sounds like Ashton Craig is exactly on track. 4 months out. Of course, the concern there is two ACLs, as Rob Hunt mentioned. The strength, getting the strength back can be a concern when there's two ACLs. Kedren Young was August 2nd, right, Priester? I mean, that was as long ago as you get into camp. So he'll be fine for the fall. JB, we've talked about this in the past. Kedren Young, we haven't ever heard a bad report about his knee healing. You just want to make sure Kedren Young is on pace to be competing the way some of these other running backs, because Aeneas Williams, Nolan James, they go at it in workouts.
Yeah, they do. They go at it in workouts, and Kedren Young needs that. You know, we heard before he was injured, right before he was injured in preseason camp last fall, his determination to prove he's an every down back and not just a short yardage back. And he needs to take that mindset with him and be back out there competing against his teammates as quickly as possible. I'm glad you bring that up. I talked to people on campus this week, hoping that I'll be able to join you guys for the podcast and tried to pick up some news there. And obviously there's not a lot in the running back room, but there's also a little bit of that sort of undercurrent of buzz about Nolan James to, quote, show he's really talented, and then continuing to hear a lot of buzz about the speed of Jonas Walton.
I thought the news on Craig and Young were very positive. I think maybe some of our subscribers didn't quite interpret it that way. And again, because the entire press conference was about injuries, and you guys did the instant, and it wasn't about injuries, but I think it's promising with Craig. I think Craig, from what I can remember, may be a little bit further ahead than he was the first time through, although that is, you know, the second injury. And so I realize there's a little bit of panic, and again, that we have a question, you know, regarding the running back room and why didn't they do this and why didn't they do that. I think part of it is because, you know, you got a bunch of young backs there competing for it, and they weren't going to spend Hollywood Smothers money, you know, for a running back, because they didn't feel like that was the best way to spend the money. And, you know, one thing I like to say about Jagusawn, and Rob Hunt mentioned it, I mean, just the time lost, you can't make it up, man. You can't make that up. And, I think his physical conditioning is way, way behind, because there's just no way for him to do the kind of things that he needs to do to play at this level of football. So, but those two guys, Craig and Kedren Young, yeah, I think that's promising. And Tim, how'd you interpret the KVA news information?
Yeah, I think that, you know, he's 3.5 months out. You can't be that far ahead. He injured his ACL in late November. So, I mean, he was always going to be out for the spring. I guess I interpret it as honesty, because it came from a physician instead of a coach, the trainer, because if it was coming from a coach, it'd say we expect him to be ready for the opener and stuff like that. But you don't say that when you're Rob Hunt. So I think that KVA being ready for the football season at some point, it'd be great. I mean, if he plays in September, that's 10 months. We can't. How fast do you want KVA to come back if you're somebody playing football? I know there's a thread. People talk about guys get back in 9 months. They do, and you can play well. But like Boubacar Traore came back and played 11 months after the injury. He was back practicing in camp 10 months, and he said, yeah, then all of a sudden I felt sore. So, like, it's a process back. It's not just – you can get back and play well, but then it's 10 days later. How do you feel?
Yeah, I still think it's – and I realize guys are recovering sooner with ACL, but I still think it's a pretty broad brush to use to say that everybody's going to be back in 9 months, especially bigger guys.
Yeah, and there's a mental aspect to it too, where even if you can run and do some of those things, do you feel comfortable cutting that like you do in the moment? Are you thinking less than you need to? You don't want somebody overthinking about, oh, I'm going to make this play. Is my body or my knee capable, or being a little nervous about it? So you've heard, I think Eli Raridan, who obviously had multiple knee injuries, you talked about, even when he felt physically ready, there was a little bit of that mental hurdles that he needed to get over. And obviously that took longer than any of us anticipated as well.
Yeah, and I would just add, like, with Rob Hunt saying, using the September, his words, talking about September and KVA, then again, it's unique KVA October, November, and December if you're Notre Dame. Like, yes, you don't expect to need him in September. So it's, again, I think O'Malley coined it last year or whatever, almost like a midseason call-up or going to the farm system, so to speak. If you're bringing KVA up from your quadruple A, because he's so good, your quadruple A team back from injury, and you're getting him ready to be full tilt by October, mid-October, that's a huge win for Notre Dame.
I hate to say we didn't know, but I didn't know that Kari Adams was going to be out for the spring after we talked to him a couple weeks ago. I was a little bit surprised by that. Labrum tear that they identified upon arrival, they did have him in the winter program. 4 to 5 month recovery process. It has happened a few weeks ago whenever Notre Dame's spring, right before Notre Dame's spring break. So he could be back during camp instead of a guy that maybe is your freshman that challenges all these veterans. Maybe he's your freshman that challenges all these veterans as mid-September, late September goes on, because he is a guy that you look at and think, that guy can help Notre Dame, and not just Notre Dame when they had bad corners in 2009 and 2015, but Notre Dame when they have good corners, Tim Priester.
Yeah, he has a ton of potential, and I wasn't aware of that either. You know, so that was like once they got to the guys out for the spring, or I guess we saw the list before, Rob Hunt. I always want to say Jim Russ, because Jim Russ was Rob Hunt's predecessor, and it's that single syllable, first name, last name, Rob Hunt. Let us know about Kari Adams. And, you know, it's a tough break. And I understand where Marcus Freeman's coming from when he feels like he doesn't have enough DBs. I think we had somebody react to that, like, well, you know, how do they not have enough DBs? Well, because they're a nickel defense. And so if you want to be three deep, you need 15 guys. And it's hard to have. I think they have 16 on roster. But obviously it's hard to keep, you know, three deep of five guys healthy all the time.
Yeah, I think Adams was probably my most exciting player to watch until we learned that news yesterday, just because of the confidence he carried in the meeting. I really wanted to see how he matched up against some of Notre Dame's receivers, see if some of that swagger comes out on the field the way we saw. I mean, Jaden Mickey was nowhere near as talented as what we expect Adams to be, but he seemed to have maybe some of that in him, or maybe he's a little quiet. I just wanted to see how he interacted out there, and it's a bummer we're going to have to wait till the fall now to do that.
He's a lot bigger than Jaden Mickey. That's where the comparison is. That guy's arms go for days, man. Before we get to Marcus Freeman, we should talk a little bit about Lauren Landau, and I want to start with Drew, because, Drew, I'm glad you cleared that up. The Notre Dame guys, as he pointed out, Wagner and Fields were training for the combine with Lauren Landau, but there are 11 more Notre Dame players training for their NFL futures with Lauren Landau.
Yeah, and I was interested, too, because Lauren Landau still has Landau Performance. I think that's out in Colorado, so he's still maintains that private enterprise, and he wrote a book on training for the combine and has trained a bunch of athletes, including Christian McCaffrey and stuff in the past. So when Notre Dame players said that they were working out with him for the combine, you assumed that was like what they used to do with Matt Bayless, and maybe some of the, I guess, not as top tier prospects would stay home and do that. But with him, it's almost, well, he has the prestige that this is the person you would want to pay for, and he does have the company. But he did clarify that, no, this is free. It's four for forever. This is part of that, and this is an opportunity for a guy. I mean, Malachi Fields going into the combine was considered, had a chance to be a first round pick. So you have guys like that willing to stay at Notre Dame and do that. Not saying he would have gone that high, but just usually that caliber of athlete goes somewhere to train for these type of things. And the fact that they have somebody that they can stay in South Bend and train with for free could be a pretty big selling point.
Priester and Bryce, the one positive of the long off season is they have more time to train. And that was what I think Marcus Freeman and Lauren Landau both mentioned. They called it a longer runway. You don't want that, honestly, but you take what you get. When you get dealt a raw blow, you have to deal with it. And that's what they got. They got more months of training.
Yeah, and Freeman addressed that, like, you know, instead of starting at period one, you can start doing period, you know, 8, 9, 10 with these guys because they are familiar with it. I feel I may have been a little bit unfair in asking Lauren Landau a question yesterday. I was just trying to give him an opportunity to provide a little bit of reality. I may have been a little bit too flip about it, you know, because, you know, strength coaches, when guys are healthy, they get credit, although that not very often. But more so when they're not healthy, they get blamed for it. Tried to give him an opportunity to answer what reality is, but he didn't want any part of that. And I can understand because he's, you know, when he was with the Broncos, he caught some heat, which was, you know, he probably felt was unfair. Which I just don't understand the people that don't understand how violent this game is. Like, don't you really don't realize how violent this is and how easy it is to be injured? And you know, a strength and conditioning coach can only do so much. I'm shocked. Maybe you need to stand on a sideline live during a game. JB, you've been there doing sideline reporting. I know it looks violent on TV, but man, if you're up close, you do not realize the kind of collisions that are going on. There's only so much a strength and conditioning coach can do with a lot of the injuries that occur.
Yeah. 4K TV and everything else will never do justice. It's like the difference between seeing a hockey puck on TV and seeing a hockey puck live, especially if you're on the glass at an NHL arena. Yeah, it's what, however fast you think it is, it's faster and it's more violent. I will say credit to Notre Dame for making the season's first batch of fresh lemonade out of the lemons that was the college football playoff process, because I think we'll all forever believe Notre Dame was one of the best 12 teams, and Notre Dame had a chance to be one of the final four, one of the final two teams standing in that. But I do think it's important to note this type of runway isn't just unique to this team. This is unique to Marcus Freeman's entire tenure here. And I think that's incredibly important. And it's not just Marcus Freeman's back, Chris Ash is back, Mike Denbrock's back. All three of those guys are back. You got a couple of different captains back, and you have your quarterback back for the first time. So when they talk runway, it's not to me just the physical runway that they're talking about. It's the stability runway. It's the continuity runway. And I do expect a more advanced Notre Dame football team from the very outset of day one of spring camp.
We'll get to running backs and spring ball in a minute, because Marcus Freeman had two interesting responses to both the dearth of linebackers and running backs. It's worth noting that five linebackers are either limited or out. Now, the important thing is three of them are limited, not out. Drake Bowen, Madden Faremo, and Kahanu Kia. Obviously, Viliamuasa is out, and freshman Jacoby Clapper is out. And we asked him, you know, is that do you need to move someone to linebacker? Where you lost linebackers in the portal, too. They lost Bodie Cahoon in the portal. They lost Preston Zinter in the portal. So, like, all those guys that could help in the spring aren't there. It was a really interesting response from me, Drew, and he's like, well, we're probably going against 11 personnel, which he slipped with, by the way, saying they were showing a lot of 11 personnel in the spring, but also other teams play a lot of 11 personnel. Certainly Notre Dame plays more 12 than other teams. Most other teams do. It's, you need three sets of two linebackers in the spring. It's remarkable, really, when you think about that, a volatile position like linebacker, they are going to be playing more nickel than anything else.
Yeah, and I think it also goes to his point that they're going to be, they don't feel like they have enough defensive backs because they want five on the field at most of the time too. So yeah, I agree. That was an interesting comment. They didn't feel they needed to add walk-on linebackers like they did another position that I'm sure we'll get to. So they maybe had an opportunity to add some depth there. They didn't feel like they needed to do that. And I think that also, I think I said this on this incident analysis yesterday too, but I mean, this is an offense without Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price back there and a quarterback who many are rating as the top returning signal caller in the country. So they might be doing a lot more to pass the ball anyway, so seeing a little bit more nickel defense might be better for preparation for the season coming up too.
Priester, I am sure he doesn't need the reps at linebacker as much this spring. I think Madden Faremo does, and he's in week 10 of 12, and that process is rough. I'm not going to act like a medical expert, but I broke that exact same bone my junior year in college. It's a really rough recovery. They have better medicine. They have better care. He also has to use his arm to hit people for the rest of his football career.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, and again, we have a question in the second segment. I'll save some of the comments for that regarding Faremo compared to KVA. But yeah, Teddy Rezac, come on down. You're going to get a whole bunch of snaps.
I didn't even think of that. Yeah, he is.
You're going to get a whole bunch of snaps at linebacker. I mean, what kind of options would you have? Would, like,
I'm told to pay attention to Koakia.
Well, I was just going.
Yeah, he is one that stunned me too. Like when I got that intel this week,
his brother's a quick learner. Maybe he's a quick learner. His brother sure was.
Yeah, that was one of the double takes. I was like, really? And he was like, looking really good.
Yeah. Well, we know they're. I mean, both those guys are violent tacklers. I think we've seen that in small doses, right? I mean, the key with them is staying healthy and staying on the field. But thank goodness that Jalen Snead came back. Yeah, you know, Tim, you mentioned, like, Thomas Davis, I don't know if, you know, you can accelerate him. He's 205, whatever he is. I'm not sure what his weight right off the top of my thought. I have him at 205.
I think he's 215 bigger than that. Is what they list him at right now.
He's bigger than that now. But, yeah, you know, look, I know we expect this to be a great Notre Dame team, and we all expect them to win all 12 regular season games. You got to beat Miami. I get that. But no football teams, nobody has a pat hand. It's just not possible to do that. And sometimes you're going to have a rash of injuries where you're going to say, damn, maybe we should have got a running back. But what kind of running back would you have gotten? Other than spending $2 million for Smothers or somebody like
that. Right. Well, you're going for a starting running back. That's not just, that's not right. reasonable. You just chased off Aeneas Williams on the spot.
Right. And you didn't feel 2 months ago that you needed to do that. So I get the second guess, and it's, you know, you'd like to have perfection under Pat Hand, but basketball, I understand. Baseball, I understand to a large degree. Football, there's just so many damn moving parts that you're just not going to be able to, especially with the high likelihood of injuries. It's just really hard to stay ahead of it at every position.
Running backs, just to be clear, that are limited. Aeneas Williams with the elbow. This is all over Irish Illustrated, but we'll make sure it's officially. I have a cleanup story, no pun intended, for the rest of the players. And of course, Drew Mentok did Charles Jagasa. But Kedren Young out for the spring as expected. Javion Osborne, less expected, although there was a note on our board to be prepared for a running back out for the spring. Javion Osborne has the same injury, scaphoid fracture, as Madden Foraimo. That bothers me a little, if we're being frank, because he has to carry a football in that hand, and it's not the easiest healing process.
Isn't his left, or is he a left-handed?
I don't know if you have to carry a football, whatever side of the field you're on, you have to.
Well, that's true, but I get that. But if you are right-handed, that can be a fallback.
Actually,
for you.
I learned to write left-handed for an entire semester because I broke my scaphoid bone.
That's incredible.
You had to put your whole arm in it. I'm not sure nowadays. The whole arm had to be in a cast up to here. So, like, atrophy set in for the elbow, thumb, all that kind of stuff. I'm sure the medicine's a little bit different now that they can handle those types.
Yeah, let's talk injuries in this podcast.
Well, I tell you what,
our injuries.
Exactly. Very quickly. Good point. I'm going to find last year's list. Last year's list was longer. Now they came off a 4-game run of playoffs.
Right.
Of course, it was longer, but it's surgery season, and the only reason. People are complaining about, not the only reason, the main reason people see all these injuries is because it's been broadcast for you. We didn't know this in other years because they didn't tell us all these things. It was just, oh, he's fine. He might be out for the spring. He's fine. He's limited. He plays when you're not in there. It's full disclosure. So now people see it. Someone told me at Notre Dame, and I'm not going to say his or her name, if your board or any of the media saw the in-season list of these, it would be an explosion. There would be no more internet if you saw the in-season list of college football players limited and out, right, JB? I mean, it's all over the place.
Yeah. It's what, again, whatever you think it is, it's so much longer. It's so much longer.
It's probably the best way of saying it.
Well, and because we don't, like, what we see is what happens on game day, what happens on, you know, Bloody Tuesday. Like, we don't, like, guys are getting hurt when that stuff's happening.
It is a big part of it. It's just now broadcast, and I get it. You know, obviously we led with injuries because injuries were the most relevant thing mentioned. Otherwise you have to lead with theory. You don't lead with theory when you have injuries to talk about. Before we go to segment two, and guys, we're going to add a quarterback question I had for segment two. Since this one's running long, I wanted to say one thing. We're going to end on a positive note. Tim Priester, how do you feel about this from Enforcers 21-17? He would like to change this year's blue gold game to the Lewin gold game. Pretty good idea, right? There's a nice little honoring for the spring.
Why not? Certainly there are going to be patches or some level of acknowledgement of Coach Holtz's passing. I was honored to be to have a spot with my wife, Lori, at the funeral the other day. Skip was great. For our subscribers, you can read some of those comments that I had in today's Thursday Thoughts, but what an incredible, I mean, you know, as great as I knew that he was, I mean, when you see the outpouring, when you see players there that didn't necessarily always got along with them, you know, former head coaches, assistant coaches, et cetera, just a tremendous man, tremendous influence on hundreds of, really thousands, when you consider the impact that he had on Notre Dame fans. Similar to, I'm not saying he's going to be the same thing, but I mean, the impact that Marcus Freeman has on people is pretty incredible, too.
Yeah, and I just wanted to briefly add, glad you got to experience that, TP. I wasn't back in South Bend yet, but I did speak with some people and just wanted to share a few anecdotes from the private reception after the funeral. And Marcus Freeman spoke, and Reese Davis spoke, and Pete Bavakwa spoke. I was told that Mark May was there, and it meant a lot to a lot of people. But I guess Marcus revealed that Coach Holtz had called him every single Sunday without fail following a loss. That's great. and said that, you know, after all those losses, he would have 10 things to go over and only ever listed nine. And then also Pete Bavacqua, one of his stops on his career climb, worked for a firm, and somebody in his firm was going to listen to Lou Holtz speak. And Pete told him, like, oh, you're about to hear the best speaker you'll ever hear in your life. And the guy got to meet Coach Holtz, and he's like, oh, hey, Pete Bavacqua told me you were going to be the best speaker I ever heard, and he's right. And Coach Holtz said, oh, Pete Bavacqua, heart of a lion. So Pete Bavacqua says he kept this heart of a lion mantra because of Coach Holtz for so long. And then years later, Coach Holtz told him, said, yeah, when I can't remember somebody, I always just say heart of a lion. I couldn't remember if you kicked the ball or ran the ball, but you had a heart of a lion. So I did want to share those two. And then Reese Davis apparently also brought the crowd down. But I was told Marcus Freeman was incredibly, remarkably poignant in his comments.
We'll be back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. First question from Bill V6118. With apparently only Nolan James and one of two freshman running backs fully available this spring, is there any possibility of other position players being asked to cross-train at running back for the spring?
Drew, jump in.
I mean, I think the tough part is with cross-training, it would be that you do expect to have potentially five healthy scholarship running backs by the fall. So, like, I talked to Eric Thomas. He did say that Bubba Frazier, for instance, he does have that type of body type. He did play a little bit of running back in high school. Had 85 carries as a junior, but do you really want to move him to a position where then all of a sudden he might be sixth in the depth chart come August? So they added some walk-ons to help, you know, build depth and help them get through spring practice and stuff like that. So, and Aeneas Williams will be available to some degree. So in my opinion, I don't think he would cross-train anyone there just because I don't know that it would serve their development long term, and it's not an immediate need for this season, at least as of right now.
Yeah, I would just say, like, if this was fall camp and the numbers were this limited, it would be entirely different. But it's right. Spring camp, and they pulled some walk-ons in for spring practice, and I think that that's going to work fine. So again, they are very excited about Nolan James. Obviously, they'll be judicious, but there are people in the Goog very excited for him to get the bulk of the work and really get to show his skill set. And again, like, a lot of optimism about the speed of Jonas Walton.
Yeah, when you say you only have two scholarship running backs for the spring, you know, it's eye opening, but I don't think that it's, you know, I don't think that it's necessarily that concerning unless Kedron Young can't answer the bell or doesn't continue to progress or if Osborne's injury is something that's problematic long term. I don't know. Who would you guys like? So, what other guys from the roster would you move there?
My guy to move would have been the guy that has an ACL injury, and Braden Robinson's the first guy you think of. That he's not going to make an immediate impact at wide receiver for Notre Dame, but he had an ACL injury, so he's not moving there, and he's out for the spring. So there's no option. I do want to put into perspective the two running back thing in the spring. That happened in 2011. Also, they had two running backs, and they had to go for walk-ons. We talked to Tim Hinton about it. Ended up having a great running year with – not great running year, but great running – back stats by Jonas Gray and Sierra Wood, but they only had two spring running backs in 2011. They went to the walk-on route. I thought Freeman made a really interesting point, and then there was a better point on our board. He said we could still evaluate wide receivers and offensive linemen in the running game when we use walk-on running backs because they still have to go block. Really good point on the board. I wish I remember what subscriber said it. I'll look it up. He kind of agreed with wide receiver. It's difficult at offensive line to wonder if they're really getting the look you need as offensive linemen when you're going 11 on 11, good against good, and you have to use walk-on running backs in there because it's probably – and you don't have to have the Jeremiah Love ability to hit a hole, but you have to have a different burst to you. You know what I mean? And
that's true, but I don't think that impedes the progress of the offensive linemen. I mean, they're judged based upon what they do against the guy, you know, ahead of them. So if the guy behind them, the running back, can't hit the hole quick enough, they, you know, they have film, they recognize that the job was done and just need somebody quicker. I just don't think that it impedes the spring the way maybe the knee-jerk reaction to it is. There's a lot of things that you can do. Two's not enough. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
to
be fair, it was a problem in 2011 in the spring, but it wasn't in the fall. So maybe that's what it is. Yeah. Like, it's a problem in the spring because you don't have enough players. Right, you don't want to run the ball right now.
You want a sixth scholarship running back, or you want a sixth running back to join the group from the transfer portal.
I,
who is that? Who's willing to do that?
Last year they had six, and I thought it was too many. The Jabron Payne.
Right.
I think two things are true, though. You would want to have more. It would help you to have more, but how do you get them in there?
If you played two backs more often, it'd be a different situation, but you don't.
I think it's good, too, that the it's two young running backs who want to prove themselves. Like, if this was last year's running back and it was Love and Price, you'd be like, well, we don't really want them to get all those carries right now, whereas at least they have something to go out and prove you. Obviously, you don't want them to get hurt, but they will benefit a lot more than last year's running backs would have from two young guys getting those reps.
Next question. We had a lot about Teddy Girard and quarterbacks, but next question, Irish Fan 88. I know everyone is high on Teddy Girard's future, but more so I'm concerned about the present. What do you guys want to see, or what have you heard about Noah Grubbs and Blake Hebert entering the spring?
I think that Teddy Girard's in the running right now, and he's not even here this spring. You know, I mean, I don't want to completely discount Hebert and Grubbs, but I think the upside is Teddy Girard, as Marcus Freeman was talking about it yesterday. You know, he said, if at the end of December, if we don't feel like we have a starting quarterback on the roster, meaning CJ Carr went to the NFL, then he didn't say the words transfer portal, but he alluded to that. I don't want to discount Hebert and Grubbs because they're going to get a ton of opportunity this spring. And so let's see what they can do. You know, let's see if they can run the offense. There are several components, of course, the ability to deliver the football, but can you run the offense? Can you get the offense and what it needs to be in? And that's difficult to do with young quarterbacks.
Yeah. Notre Dame's a complete enough program that looking into the future, it can win games with Hebert and Grubbs. For Notre Dame to sustain excellence, I think the prevailing sentiment is that Teddy Girard will ultimately become the future at that position.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's a reason why they pushed for him to enroll early. I know they want four scholarship quarterbacks on the roster, but they could have figured that out and let him come in a year later if that weren't something that they thought significantly about.
I mean, he's here for a reason.
Right.
They didn't bring in Teddy Girard because they're pleased with what's going with.
Well, I wish he was here. He will be here.
That would be really weird if he was here as a high school junior. As when you say, Tim, in the old days, you're drawing outside the margins of Duloc, they would just be like, throw it out. Bring that kid in here right now. He looks good at quarterback. So
can Teddy Girard be as good as CJ Carr? CJ Carr is one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterback in the country. Do I think Teddy Girard can approach that at the very least? That's my feeling right now. I always hate, I said Thursday Thoughts Day, I hate to say that before I've seen him actually in a Notre Dame uniform practicing, but I think that all accounts that we're hearing about him is a guy that is on the plane or approaching the plane of what they thought CJ Carr could do, which is accurate.
Oh, sorry. Question number three from CMC Master 21. I feel like Madden Foraimo is not getting the sophomore hype or discussions a top 100 linebacker may receive. Is this more due to the star-studded upperclassman overshadowing him, or is he not quite the second coming of KVA as some of us had hoped? T.O., let's start with you.
I had him in my top 12 at the season's end, projecting into this season, knowing he had a bad wrist. I didn't know he had that wrist injury, but knowing he had a bad wrist because I shook his hand, and I felt bad after doing it because he was politely gave me his hand to shake and it was obviously injured. I think Madden Frame was going to be fantastic. I just wish I think he could use his spring because he spent a lot of last spring with an injured wrist too. And he spent a lot of last spring assimilating to college. Max Bulla was very high on him, but he was high on him mentally, high on him as a person that is learning to be a Notre Dame student. I think he needed this spring. He will be in part of it. I think the guy's going to be great. I think he's going to be better than Snead and Osberry and Bowen. But I am very high on KVA. I just don't put him in that spot.
Do you think Foraimo is the second coming of Viliamu Asa?
I don't know that we've seen. I mean, especially with the wrist injury, the different things that KVA can do, I don't know that I would say he's quite that versatile. I think there's a lot of things he does well, especially I think he did well in pass coverage when we saw him last year. But I think KVA, if he didn't have the injury, we might be looking at him as maybe the best returning linebacker in the country. And I don't know that Madden Foraimo is another year away from being in that category. But he's very talented. I get that from similar areas. They have similar background, so they maybe that comparison's easier. But I KVA, I think, is on another level in terms of just what he's capable of than almost any other linebacker I can think of off the top of my head right now in college football.
Go ahead, John.
I was just briefly going to say I am incredibly high on Madden Faremo, and I love his size and just the way he plays the game. So I get the question about the hype. We didn't quite get to see enough of him last year, although we saw flashes of it. I do think he desperately needs this spring and needs to get as much as he possibly can from this spring. But KVA is back mid-September. Then by mid-October, I think he'll reestablish himself as one of the best in college football. And then I think you look at having Madden Faremo positioned to be one of the best in college football in 27.
I'm kind of more in Drew's camp that I don't know that I would say second coming, but I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, Tim, like you said, I mean, the entire time we've seen him, he's had a wrist injury. Yep. So that's, you know, that's limiting him, of course. But I go back to Max Bulla talking about Kingston Viliamuasa as an early entry freshman, and there was the moment he stepped on the field, they knew he was going to play. He was going to be a player that would be difficult to take off the field. And so, you know, with that in mind, I think I stopped short of saying second coming with Madden Faremo, but I also know that when he and Viliamuasa were on the field together, that was a pretty darn good tandem last year. And that was, you know, as a true freshman with Faremo.
He's the KVA's ability to rush the passer is just a differentiator that most linebackers don't have. And honestly, KVA is the third best player on this roster when he's healthy. CJ Carr, Leonard Moore, CJ Carr, however you want to do it.
Yeah, no, I think
I agree.
That is just a different situation.
We have a question from Jay Jude. Which returning defensive line contributor has the most room to grow as a player, and which player would make the biggest impact on the 2020 season if he took that next step?
Go ahead, Drew.
I said Bryce Young for both. I mean, I know we were really high on him going to last year, but I mean, you look at his size and talent and genetics and all those things that if he does jump up another level and kind of put it all together, the different things you can do with him on the defensive line, moving him inside, what he can do as a pass rusher. Just, I mean, we were talking about him as a potential breakout candidate for like an All-American. Like he has the potential to be a future first round pick and has a lot of all those talents. So if he starts putting it together as a junior, I think that could be really huge on the roster, and he has a lot of potential left to tap into.
Just to avoid tripling up on Bryce Young, Priester, I will add Keon Keeley to this, because you say room to grow. The Keon Keeley I saw versus Oklahoma, I thought that guy would have looked great in an Notre Dame uniform. The Keon Keeley I saw versus IU, I don't remember because he was getting blocked and didn't matter. So I would like to see Keon Keeley grow into the player I saw play against Oklahoma when he impacted a college football playoff game.
I catch grief when I'm asked to name one guy and then I name five. My first choice.
You are asked to name one guy. Yeah. However,
let me just say Young would be my first. Bryce Young would be my first choice as well. But I'm going to go to Teon Gray. I mean, I really think that there's, when you consider his size, I was kind of blown away, impressed with how happy he was to be here and be not just to be here, but to be closer to home. I think he's going to find a real comfort zone. I think he's committed to dropping weight, you know, because he feels like that will make him a better football player. I don't think that Charlie Partridge told him that he had to do that, but that's something that he wants to do. And I think that if you get that big body playing at peak performance, I think there's a ton in there. But like you guys, I would choose Bryce Young first.
Next question from Any Davis 2. Somehow he found his way back on the podcast. Knowing Sider's penchant for playing just two backs, does this spring naturally present a scenario where a back can separate from the pack? And I think he might mean Jonas Walton or Nolan James, because that's really the only way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely. And I think you also have the opportunity to, I mean, it's different at running back, but we saw with CJ Carr, once he got in that competition and you get worried about making mistakes, like now, you know, if you're one of those two running backs, you're going to have ample opportunities to go out there and show what you have. And if you have a bad day, like you're going to get plenty of opportunities the next day too. So they're going to have a lot of chances to learn and grow and figure things out. So I definitely think, while this may not be what's best for Notre Dame as a whole, this could be what's best for Nolan James's development and his opportunities this fall.
Well, if anybody's going to separate himself from the other back, it's going to be Nolan James Jr. And really excited to see him. You know, our first impression when he came in was that he was, look how small he is. And then he weighed 215 or whatever he is. I mean, I think he's a pretty special back. I didn't particularly think that he ran well in November. I'm trying to remember which game it was. I think it might have been the Stanford game where I didn't think that he ran particularly well.
Yeah, I remember
well.
You saying that. I don't remember what game it was either now, actually. But it was probably before that because
it may have been Syracuse because yeah. I only think Syracuse, he ended up yeah. having a couple carries against Stanford. But really interested to see him. He's, you know, I think he is, you know, I think he's the kind of guy that on the outside looking in, you're like really skeptical. And then on the inside looking out, they're saying, you guys got to see this guy. He can really play. So it'll be fun. And he would be the differentiator because Jonas Walton still doesn't even know how to hold the football yet. There's, you know what I mean? I mean, just in general, there's so much of the nuances that he has to learn from Coach Sider, which he's starting to learn right now. But the significant edge there, I think, is Nolan James Jr.
Drew, before you read the next question, I got a note from JB. We did know he was going to have to leave at 45. He had a prior commitment, so it's not a technical issue. Well, you don't see JB on your screen anymore if you're on Zoom. But he wrote quickly, spring 2025, last year, had 9 players out completely, 5 limited, and then 10 were on individual plans. What's missing, so they're 24 completely, 24 in total, including modifications. What they did not include really this year because they did not have the playoff was the individual plans because they didn't. Emil Wagner was on an individual plan where there basically was like, he just took 1,000 snaps. He just spent the entire season, the entire January playing football. So when you don't see him out there, he's not hurt. They don't need to do individual plans this year because they've been off for 3 months unwittingly.
Our next question is from Malloy on base. You're Joe Rudolph. You're asked by Freeman for your early spring projection of the starting offensive line for the Wisconsin opener. What are you telling him?
Black. Left or
go ahead.
Well, we can probably say it together.
Say it together. Go ahead. I think we got it. Go ahead.
Left or right? Black.
Knapp.
Knapp. Craig.
Yeah.
Absher. Lambert.
So Craig was out. I agree with Craig, but Craig got injured before USC, right? Before USC. That's exactly midseason. I'll say Otting starts in Wisconsin.
Okay, fair enough.
But that's not the basis.
Right. I really think Absher is, he's a little underrated. I mean, I did not like, again, here, which game was it? I did not like his first game. I thought he was as a starter.
nor Lambert's first game either.
So. Yeah. He was unaggressive, and it's like, well, is it going to be like this? And it changed after that. And so Sullivan Absher was a highly rated offensive lineman, and, we always want the guy that you can't have, and Jagus is the guy that you can't have right now. But if you go into Wisconsin, Sullivan Absher's your starting right guard. I know he only has a handful of starts, but I think he understands the level of intensity and aggressiveness that he has to play with. And who wouldn't be a little bit reticent the first time you start along the offensive line for Notre Dame? Joe Otting wasn't.
Yeah, well, I want to give a little credit. I mean, Joe Otting did a great job, but that was week 7, and USC's defensive line is not the national runner-up defensive line because it was Emil Wagner and Anthony Knapp getting their asses kicked in that game, too. So let's give some credit to Miami for bludgeoning Notre Dame's offensive line. I don't think it would have happened in November. I don't think it would have happened in a rematch in January, but they won by knockout.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. We have a question from Bayou Brian Song. Each of you name a player you're most interested in watching on Friday. Then please, on that podcast, talk about him.
I like that question. I think it's an interesting one to specific player. And I'm going to go, because of the way this podcast went, I'm going to go with Nolan James. Now that he is kind of on the spring guy on the spot, Nolan James is my player to watch.
I mean, I mentioned I wanted to go with Adams. I kind of want to see Keon Keeley out there. I mean, we've seen him in the college game, but just to see what he looks like and how he fits in physically or stands out physically and what he can do. And I think when we met with him as the media earlier, we saw his like engaging personality and kind of all the things he did. So I kind of want to see how that fits in with his teammates. And we think he's a Notre Dame fit, but how does that actually work in practice too?
I tend to gravitate to the lines for questions like this, or at least with the current configuration of Notre Dame's lines. Offensively, I'll say Will Black. Defensively, I'll say Chris Burgess.
That's a great one for Chris Burgess. And I guess I have to. We all have to go back against these because we're watching a non-contact practice. So I did a running back. You guys did linemen. Let's go with a wide receiver out there. So I will go Mylon Graham because there's not going to be a whole lot of hitting. But I think you guys had great answers for when we see people hitting each other. But I'll throw Mylon Graham in because one-on-ones will actually happen tomorrow. So we can – Nolan James probably won't be allowed to be tackled. So he's going to look great the entire time.
He's going to score every time.
He's going to be the best-looking running back. They never tackled the guy. He's going to be fantastic.
Am I asking this one?
Yeah, I thought.
Yeah, that's cool. All right. From O'Bannon Rules, give me a first-round NCAA tournament upset, men's. Could Notre Dame, as currently constructed, win the NIT? And is the NIT deader than a pre-Christmas bowl game?
I thought you would like that one.
I would say way deader because I love the pre-Christmas bowl games.
Go ahead, Drew.
I have High Point over Wisconsin. High Point is third nationally in points per game. They won 30 games this year. I know they didn't play anybody, but it's something I'm watching. And would think, I like when teams score a lot, go farther in the tournament. So that's also a reason to root for them.
Speaking of not playing anybody, did you guys watch the Miami of Ohio win last night?
That was not to the very end, but man,
they came out shooting.
They came out with something to prove, and they proved it.
They did. I thought that was
SMU. SMU is a typical ACC team. What an underachieving team!
Exactly.
I
barely won the Texas bet, but I only took them because they were playing an underachieving ACC team at NC State, and that's. Like, why are they getting these? Why are they giving all these points to a team that has
when you saw SMU's offense rolling this year, that was poetry. And they didn't really deserve to be in the tournament. they just didn't.
Yeah, they didn't make the 64, I guess.
Yeah, my upset I was looking for was that's kind of ruined it for me there, Drew. That was mine as well. I did take, but because of extra odds, I went North Dakota State because it's a DraftKings thing where if they are the upset, you put your bet in for them to be the biggest upset. So in other words, if you put in TCU beating Ohio State, you're probably not going to win anyway, even though that's the mini upset. So I threw that in there, but I like that one. And then it would be kind of sad if Nebraska lost because they have never won an NCAA tournament game. So I almost am rooting for them not to be upset.
Well, do you know, as we're recording this, you want to know what score that game is?
Oh, yeah. No, what is it? What you got there?
Nebraska is up 16 at the start of the second half. One of my picks, and it was a small dog, but was TCU, which also is playing right now as we record, and they were winning by double digits, but they have a 1-point advantage with 8 minutes to go. So
Notre Dame win the NIT. Tim Priester, could Notre Dame win the NIT as currently constructed?
Hell no.
That's all we need there. And Drew Mentok, since Priester doesn't want to answer this, is the NIT deader than a pre-Christmas bowl game?
I think so. I think it's unfortunate, though. The NIT at one point was the tournament that crowned the national championship way back in the day, and it's been on a progressive decline ever since the 1950s. So,
ever since the 1980s at least. But I remember as a very young kid that Ralph Sampson played in the NIT, and it was a huge deal that they were going to the finals of the NIT. Believing Ralph Sampson playing the NIT is crazy to think of, Tim, as a freshman. I also remember when Notre Dame wasn't good enough, when they made runs to the Final Four 3 times, that I truly enjoyed watching.
Oh, yeah. I was a kid. I was 12 or something like that when they beat Virginia Tech, which was a huge.
Right. On a tip in? Toby Knight?
Yeah, on an NIT. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe I was a little bit older.
I remember
than that,
Toby Knight tipping that in, kind of. So
I'm sure you do, or somebody told your big brother John told you about it.
Yes.
My upset pick is Virginia Commonwealth over North Carolina, and they're only a 2.5-point underdog. But North Carolina, from the ACC, always seems to be kind of ripe for something like this. I think they are right now. They have an injury. They have a significant injury. So, I think Texas over BYU, but I'm not sure that that's that much of an upset. Texas getting a couple points.
Final question is a two-parter, and it's kind of fun. From Chris Koziak, in honor of March Madness, who is your Notre Dame men's basketball all-time starting five? You can add two bench players and a head coach. However, before you guys answer this, somebody jumped in on Twitter hosting Ghosts, and he added, give Priester the Digger era, give Bryce Mentok or Samson, not knowing who's going to be on, the Bray era, and O'Malley gets the McLeod era. So that guy's kind of a jerk. But go ahead, Drew, why don't you go first on this one? I get the McLeod era for crying out loud for this.
So I did a little bit of research because I don't remember all these players as well, except I do remember Chris Thomas was good up until his sophomore year. So nothing for Chris Thomas as a junior or senior, only sophomore year.
You're allowed to do that. I do this a lot in exercises.
Yeah, he shot 38.5% from deep and almost 7 assists that year. And then it went down pretty significantly after that. Then Jaren Grant, of course, Matt Carroll, we're going small, Pat Connaughton and Luke Herangode, and then Ben Hansbrough and Jordan Cornett for some defense and blocking ability off the bench.
Let me just say that Pat Connaughton's my all-time. I've always said he's not the greatest leader in Notre Dame basketball history. I think he might be the greatest leader in Notre Dame sports history. He was phenomenal. But I'm going to cheat a little bit because I did watch Austin Carr play, and that was right before Digger.
I think he was trying to get you to cheat.
Yeah, so, okay. Well, I'm going to cheat because I usually do, because when you ask me to pick one, I pick five. So
he should have given you the McLeod era, because then you had five, and you'd have been out of luck like
the
me.
The McLeod era? Yeah, who wants it? So I'm going to start with Austin Carr. Adrian Dantley was who I tried to model my game after, which is kind of when I was in high school, which is kind of comical because I was 6'2" and 100 nothing. But I did ball fakes, and I lived at the free throw line, which is what Adrian Dantley did. And he was the king of taking charges. I don't know if you remember that. But Carr, Dantley, Trapuka, Shoemate, John Paxson. I'm a little biased there because we were friends in college.
Mine's a little easier. I don't have a giant group of people to choose from. But I'm going to put my team up, Tim Priester. I'm going to put my team up against yours if you're not allowed to use Austin Carr. Okay? Listen to this team. John McLeod era. I don't have many options. However, LaPhonso Ellis. Pat Garrity, Monty Williams. This is my front line. All right. Senior year, Elmer Bennett. Senior year, Damon Sweet.
That's pretty damn good. I have nobody else. Man.
That's my guys right there. I'm rolling out with those five. We're running up and down the court until we pass out.
You chose those five, and it was from a maximum of five to choose from.
Yes. Yeah, I got the exact right five mixed in there. We can bring Ryan Hoover off the bench to hit some threes.
I do want to say somebody, this was a question, I don't know where we almost included it, but you know, guys that the all development team.
Oh yeah, that was great on our board. It was a threat on our board.
I mean, when you think of like Zach August, his last year was attacking the damn basket. Zach August, Jack Cooley, like these aren't guys that necessarily were going to be stars. Luke Herangode wasn't going to be the second leading scorer in Notre Dame history.
He was the only one I didn't want to use because he was so good early.
Well, that's fair because he was good right out of the gate. Bonzi Colson, John Mooney, Martin Gebben, Matt Farrell, who did these guys develop under?
Well, not Shrewsbury, if that's the question you're asking me. But yeah, Tyrone Nash was another one.
Ty Nash was very, very good late. Yep. Yeah,
and Drew's guy, Matt Carroll, was maybe the number one because he went from a guy that liked to shoot to an NBA player.
Yeah. I loved it. He went from a guy that would shoot that became a great penetrator with length and really made himself into a hell of a basketball player.
Tim Abramitis.
He played in the NBA for a while too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Tim Abramitis, another one, there it goes forever. So what we're saying here is this is a bunch of Notre Dame basketball talk at the end of the spring practice thing that has nothing to do with this year's NCAA tournament because they're not near it and they're not winning the NIT. Yeah. But that was fun. And my John McLeod team might win a 5-on-5.
Well done, Tio.
Like those guys. Yeah, we're fun to watch no matter what, the John McLeod team. Also fun to watch will be tomorrow's first spring practice. We will have a full viewing in the morning. I think our next full viewing is going to be that what we like to call the jersey scrimmage. Later on, there's some partial viewings, of course, for Irish Illustrated subscribers to read practice reports. But tomorrow we have a full viewing, and we also speak with the coordinators post-practice. So we will come right back after we can do our practice reports with a special Irish Illustrated Insider podcast on Friday early afternoon. Until then, for Tim Priester and Drew Mentok, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thanks for watching and listening, Irish Illustrated Insider.